are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. The climate emergency is probably the biggest market failure in, well, the history of markets. And so we're accustomed to thinking about solutions as policies to moderate or intercede in markets, rather than the functioning of the markets themselves. But a new working paper implies that CO2 emissions per capita are actually lower in economies in which equity finance has a bigger role, and that when stock markets expand, polluting industries become cleaner. So do we already have a global green finance initiative under our noses? Well, I'm at the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development today to ask these questions to Ralph de Haas. He's the director of research here and one of the authors of this paper. Ralph, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hi, Tim, and welcome to EBRD.
The Paris Agreement on climate change emphasised, and I'm quoting from it here, ways to make financial flows consistent with a pathway towards low greenhouse gas emissions. Why is it so important to do this for the way that we deal with the climate emergency?
Let me first start, by the way, by saying that this is a joint work with Alexander Popov at the Research Department of the ECB. This is important because we know that there's a very rapid growth in green finance, so green bonds or green investment funds that are very important, that are growing very rapidly, and that they have the explicit intention to create positive green externalities, if you will. And that's fantastic. EBRD has been doing that since 2010. We have been issuing green bonds to finance some of our green projects. But it has also been acknowledged that even though this market is growing very rapidly, it is unlikely to be enough funding to actually finance the complete green transition. And from that perspective, it's a bit of a similar discussion, I think, to the discussion about the Sustainable Development Goals, where we know that we have to crowd in private funding as well, regular finance, regular bank funding, regular stock market funding, in order to get closer to the goals of the Paris Agreement. And so when Alex and I started thinking about this topic, we were actually looking for evidence on what the greening or maybe the environmental pollution that was involved with regular stock markets and regular banks. But we couldn't find any empirical evidence on that. And so that was actually the start of the project.
As you say, in this research, you're focusing on the relative effectiveness of bank lending and equity finance to make these things happen. Surprising that there isn't research on this, but now you've done it. Why might bank funding be worse than stock markets at reducing pollution?
There are a couple of reasons, I think. One is that, in a way, I think banks are inherently conservative. So they are very good at financing more of the same existing technologies, helping firms to adopt technologies that have already been implemented by other firms. And in a way, that's in their own interest. A lot of their existing loan portfolio is actually underpinned by collateral that is based on these technologies. So banks would be shooting themselves in the foot if they would start to finance new technologies that may actually undermine some of the value of the stuff that they have already financed. And I think more generally, there is a lot of evidence out there that banks are not really well equipped to finance frontier innovations, so really new technology. So I think a big part of our story is actually sort of a green side effect of that, because we know that a lot of green investments are actually based on new technologies or technologies that have yet to be invented. So I think that is one of the main underlying mechanisms. And more generally, I think banks tend to have a relatively short-term horizon. So they look at the impact of the environment on the performance of the clients that they finance for the period of the loan that they are giving, and sort of what happens after that is not really much of a concern. And of course, for stock market investors, they are discounting a complete future. They will take the future or a longer future into account when they make lending decisions or when they make investment decisions.
So your analysis on the effectiveness of stock markets gives us two main results, isn't it? I gave the game away in the intro on those. The first one, you looked at a country level, and that associates equity financing with lower emissions per capita. How strong is this association?
It's quite strong. I will give you a few numbers in a second. The first thing that was quite surprising to us is that when we control for the structure of the financial system, actually the size of the financial system, is not that important. So in all the different parts of the paper, we actually find a very strong and important role for the structure of the financial system, but less so for the size as such. If we try to quantify that, maybe the easiest way to think about this is a little thought experiment that we describe in the paper. So what we know is that there are a couple of large economies, Australia, Finland, the Netherlands, Canada, that have a quite balanced financial system, if you will. So about half of all financing is provided by banks and about half of that is provided by stock markets.
Mm-hmm.
So the thought experiment that we do in the paper is let's take all countries that have a financial system that is more skewed towards bank funding as compared to these countries that I just mentioned. That's actually about 80% of all the countries in our data set. So in those 80% of countries, suppose we could magically overnight change the financial system to one that is relatively balanced, and that's at 50-50% split. That would reduce annual per capita CO2 emissions by about 0.8 metric tons. And that corresponds to about a decline of 11.5% in total current aggregate emissions worldwide. Mm. And that in turn is about 40% of what the Paris Agreement is looking for. So these numbers are large. They are not massive. They would not be enough to get to Paris completely, but it would be a good start. If, of course, we could magically change countries' financial system from one day to the other.
It's quite a big if, isn't it? We better mention which countries you're looking at here. Who's in your data set?
We try to get as many countries as possible in the data set. So that includes both emerging markets, developing countries, and a large group of OECD or developed countries as well. So we really tried with this paper. As I said, we didn't find any existing evidence. So we tried to be as comprehensive as possible, data allowing, of course.
And a second result, as I understand it, puts a time dimension on this, that when stock markets expand, industries pollute less. There would seem to be a lot of moving parts here. Can we interpret this as a causal relationship?
We definitely try to push for that in the paper. Mm. So we followed a three-pronged strategy in that sense. So we start with a country-level analysis, which is basically about correlation. So this is where we establish the basic facts. Then we move down to the industry-level analysis, which buys us more in terms of identification. So we get closer to internal validity, if you will. But of course, that comes at the cost, as usual, cost of some external validity. And then finally, in the most recent version of the paper, we actually have a firm-level analysis as well. We use detailed data from Belgium, and we try to understand how a shock, a policy experiment that happened there that changed the structure of the financing structure of firms, how that impacted their CO2 emissions. And so there we get very close to very neat identification. But of course, we have to buy that at the cost of giving up some external validity.
Do we know in any detail how this process would work? What causes these changes to happen?
Well, two broad channels that we look at in the paper. So one is a cross-sector allocation or reallocation, and the other one that we focus on is within-sector energy efficiency. Right. So the way we think about this is if there's more finance or a different type of finance in the economy, different types of finance actually help different types of sectors to expand relatively quickly, or maybe other sectors to even shrink. And so we find some evidence for that. We find that when stock markets become bigger relative to banks, we see relatively clean sectors expanding faster and relatively dirty sectors actually shrinking or expanding less quickly. So that's the first channel that we describe in the paper. And the second channel is not about changes across sectors, but it's actually about changes over time within sectors. And what we do there is we look at the impact of, again, rapidly expanding stock markets relative to banking sectors. And we try to see what is the impact of that on total CO2 emissions per unit of value added. So this is about how clean firms can produce one unit of output. And what we see there is that over time, when these stock markets expand, actually pollution per unit of output goes down. So that implies that somehow firms are actually able to clean up their production structure. We then use another data set, which is on patenting, and we show that we can actually pinpoint that exactly at the moment that stock markets start to expand, we see a couple of years later that in those economies, in particular dirty industries, start to issue more patents. Now, they are not issuing any type of patents. They are issuing what we call green patents, which have the explicit purpose of cleaning up production structures of firms. So we can actually really quite neatly point to a smoking gun in the sense that if this stock market funding becomes available, we see a decline in CO2 emissions per value added. And that is actually being caused by the fact, or we assume that as being caused by the fact that we see more green patenting and more green research and development going on.
In that last piece of evidence, you're not just targeting adopting technologies. This is creating new technologies
From scratch.
Yes,
exactly. Yes. Because these are new technologies that are being patented. So this is the first time that these things are being developed. And so the underlying mechanism that we assume is going on is that this, as we know that stock markets are relatively good at financing this innovation. And we see this happening in this particular case as well.
Now, there is a third channel, isn't there, Ralph, that isn't quite so virtuous, which is that these firms could be outsourcing their pollution. They could be moving it offshore to poorer parts of the world. So really, they're not helping the environment at all if they do that.
That's a very good point. And it was a point that was repeatedly pointed out to us when we started presenting this work. And we take that very serious in the analysis. So this is really about pollution havens. So the idea that from a global perspective, we may actually not be improving a lot if in a specific country, stock markets would develop because a lot of the production would actually move elsewhere. And because, you know, CO2 emissions spread around the world, we would not be helping the global good, if you will. So in the paper, we use the World Input-Output database, which has very detailed information at the sector level about import and exports. But it also has information about the CO2 emissions that were produced when those imports and exports were being produced. So we know the amount of CO2 that is embedded in imports, for instance. If we do an analysis that is very similar to the main sector level analysis in the paper, we try to see what happens when stock markets expand. Not so much in terms of domestic production, but in terms of imports within the same sectors that we look at in the earlier part of the paper. So I think an easier way to understand is by giving an example. Suppose in Germany, stock markets would be expanding relative to banks. That would help a relatively polluting industry. Let's take the car industry, car manufacturing as an example. That would give these car manufacturers the opportunity and perhaps also the incentive to clean up their production structures. So that's what we observe in the first part of the paper. And what we observe in the cross-border part of the paper, we also see, as you rightly pointed out, that at that same time, there is an increase in imports into Germany of relatively polluting goods. And so there are two goods that are being imported. One is intermediate goods. So we see that German car manufacturers would start to produce part of their production abroad. And we can actually see that that is in relatively polluting sectors, relatively polluting countries. And German consumers also start to increase their purchases of cars from relatively polluting countries. So indeed, it seems to be the case that part of these effects, the cleaning effects that we find, are being offset by polluting effects elsewhere. Now, the very important point to make is that offshoring effect is only about 10% of the total effect that we find domestically, right? So there is a bit of carbon leakage, if you will, but in total, the greening effect, the domestic greening effect dominates.
A lot of the discussion about market-based climate policies are centered around carbon pricing. How big are these reallocation innovation effects that you've been talking about in comparison with carbon pricing and the impact that that can have?
So we haven't looked at that explicitly. I think that's a very good point. So I already mentioned the fact that if we the thought experiment that we have to sort of quantify the effects that we find as a proportion of the total Paris Agreement goals. And so I think for future research, it would be very interesting to look at this and explicitly model how carbon pricing, so cap and trade or carbon taxes, may actually compare to, let's say, greening the financial system. I think one of the reasons why we haven't done this in this paper, well, one reason is that the paper is already quite long, so I think there's a limit to what you can do in one piece of research. The other reason is that this is not an entirely straightforward exercise to do because a lot of these policies interact with each other. I think the introduction of a cap and trade system would give firms the right incentives to produce in a more clean way. And I think our results would then tell us that having the right type of finance available will then actually improve the effectiveness of those carbon pricing policies. So we would really have to have a proper model to think about this in a structured way rather than looking at this as separate policies, because the interaction effects will be quite large.
Well, there's your next paper for you.
There's a next paper, yeah. Exactly.
Now, we started this podcast with a clip of Greta Thunberg, who very well encapsulates the skepticism that a lot of people have towards market-based solutions to the climate crisis. When you look at the world's largest market economy, that's 80% fueled by oil, gas, and coal. It's withdrawn from the Paris Agreement. And many of its carbon-intensive firms reacted to their knowledge of the climate crisis and the science that they generated on it by instead investing in lobbying to make sure that they weren't regulated, discrediting climate science. So you'd have a hard time convincing a dedicated climate activist that the business as usual operation of stock markets is going to help.
I don't think in the paper we are pushing for that angle specifically. I think the way to interpret our results is that we know if we look at the history of how countries develop and how pollution develops, we see an inverse U-shaped pattern between economic development on the one hand and pollution on the other.
The Kuznets curve.
The Kuznets curve, environmental yeah. Kuznets curve, exactly. So what you see is that over time, countries start to grow, they start to industrialize. We see an increase in pollution. At some point, there's a move from industry to services. There's also more innovation. Perhaps also people start to ask for cleaner technologies because they are fed up with pollution. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, we see pollution going down. That's what we've seen in the UK, in France, in the US, and what we have not yet, but hopefully will see as well in countries like China and India. So I think one way of looking at our results is that having the right funding structure in your financial system may speed up the movement of countries through that Kuznets curve. So it may, initially, it will increase production, and invariably that means more things being produced, there's more pollution, but over time it helps countries to more quickly return to that cleaner equilibrium. And of course, there's no reason for complacency. This is not about leaving either banks or stock markets to their own devices. I think it's important, first of all, to put pressure on banks to clean up their act and to become cleaner investors or cleaner lenders, if you will. There are a couple of initiatives on the way to do that, and consumer pressure or depositor pressure may actually help in this regard as well. And we also know that among stock market investors, there's a lot of variation as well. So we know that a lot of institutional investors, for instance, place increasing value on environmentally friendly investments. We know that there's a distinction between European investors who find this more important as compared to American investors. So I think there's a lot to be gained by looking at the different types of investors in stock markets as well.
Your paper made me go back to look up some of the policy proposals that politicians have been coming up with recently. The most famous of those is the Green New Deal from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in the United States. I noticed that they seem to be very focused on government programs and government spending and tended to de-emphasize market-based incentives. Do you think there's a danger that we might focus a little bit too much on what government should do and miss the opportunity on getting the benefit of structuring markets, the sort of things you're talking about here?
Well, I think these things go hand in hand, so we need both. I think, first of all, governments are absolutely essential to set the right incentives in the first place. So that's the carbon tax that you mentioned or the cap and trade systems. That is crucial, and I think governments have a clear role there. And governments may even go further. There may indeed, as you explained, there may be a role for large-scale public funding to give innovation, green innovation, a push. If we are relatively clear that there are large positive externalities of certain investments, and that is a difficult judgment call to make, and we know that can go horribly wrong, but we also know that there are clear-cut examples where a push by governments to actually finance investments like that can give countries a head start. So I think in particular in a low interest rate environment, it's definitely worthwhile to think about a role for governments there as well. So it's incentive setting. Second, it's about potentially funding green research and development where we expect large externalities. And then finally, coming back to the topic of the paper, it's also about making sure that governments are not setting the wrong incentives in the financial system. So we know that a lot of countries have corporate tax systems that are skewed against equity finance. So there are tax shields for corporate debt, but not for corporate equity. And so the example that I gave earlier on in Belgium is very interesting because they introduced a notional interest deduction, so a twist to their corporate tax system that actually made it much more attractive for firms to start issuing equity. So they basically level the playing field in terms of firms' financial structure. So here as well, the government has a role to play.
Ralph de Haas, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Are you definitely going to want to read this paper? Its title is Finance and Carbon Emissions. The authors are Ralph de Haas and Alexander Popov. It's available as a CEPR working paper number 14012. Ralph said that it was very long, but if you don't like the mathematics, the discussion is very clear and it's very easy to follow. And it's something that we all have to have an opinion about. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And remember, you can always find the back catalogue at www.voxeu.org/vox-talks.